To depart from what we normally do, I talk about Parshat Shavua, because we've been doing all sorts of series and liturgical stuff, and there is a passage in the middle of Parshat Ekev, which is bizarre, and I don't want you to take my word for it that it's bizarre, or even take your own word for it when you read the text and see it's bizarre. We have no less of authority than the Tziv telling us it's bizarre. So let's take a look at the Parsha. But first, two words of introduction to Parashat Ekev. Sefer Dvarim is generally structured in three sections. There is several ways to make this division, but there is sort of a historic introduction, which is pretty much Parashat Dvarim, which is a retelling of the history pretty much from Har Sinai till here, with a lot of gaps and a lot of changes and a lot of interesting variations. And then there is beginning pretty much at the beginning of Beit Hanan all the way through the beginning of Kitavo, which is the bulk of Sefer Dvarim, something that we refer to as Ne'um HaMitzvot. Now, many people like to divide Ne'um HaMitzvot into two parts. I'll explain why I'm not doing that. And then the rest of Dvarim is Brit. All various forms of Brit, including the explicit Brit, including the Tochacha, including the Shirata Brit, which is Hazinu, and then it ends with the farewell. So those are the three sections. The reason, and this is an important footnote on Parshat Ekev, the reason that I'm not dividing the Ne'um HaMitzvot, which is the bulk of Dvarim, really from Perek Dalad through Chavav, which is 80% of the book, into two parts. People typically will divide it and say Beit Hanan and Ekev is what we call Ne'um HaMusar, sort of Moshe's exhortations towards proper behavior. And then from Re'eh, Shoftim and Kitetze, at the beginning of Tavo, Ne'um HaMitzvot, because that's more practical stuff. But as I showed a couple of years ago, if you take a look at the beginning of Beit Hanan, besides that very, very beginning piece, the huge Perek Dalad is a retelling of Matan Torah, the importance of the lessons you learn from Matan Torah, Lo Ritem Kol Tmuna, the importance of passing it on to your kids, Vodatam Levanecha Vene Vanecha, etc. And then immediately afterwards, Moshe retells with his own Parshanut the Aseret HaDibrot. And if you look very carefully, from there on all the way till Kitavo is a detailing, or if you will, almost a commentary on Aseret HaDibrot. And so it starts with the rest of Beit Hanan and Ekev, which are about the ways to properly relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In other words, the expansion of Anochi Adonai Elohecha and Lo Yeh Lecha Elohim Acherim, and all the warnings about Avodah Zarah, including in Parshat Ekev. Re'eh then focuses first on Lo Tisa Shem Adonai Elohecha Lashav, and the expansion of that is sanctifying God's name. And it's not enough to just desist from defiling God's name, but actually to sanctify it. And the way to do it is to focus on Hamakom Asher Yivchar Adonai. What's the rest of the phrase? L'shaken Shemosham. And so the centrality of worship. And then the next diber, which is about Shabbat, then gets expanded into the Moadim and the seven-year cycle for Avadim, and also to other expansions of time. The next diber is Kavedet Aviyach V'Atimecha, and the expansion of that, of course, is Shoftim V'Shotrim, and Parshat Shoftim is all focused on the power structure in Israel, the Shoftim, the Nevi'im, the Kohanim, and the Melech. Not in that order, but that's expansion of power, of the authority position. The core kernel is Aviyach V'Atimecha, and then it expands to that. And then if you look at Tetze, it kind of goes through the expansions of Lo Tirtzach, Lo Tin'af, Allah's V'Nara, Murasa, etc., Lo Tignov, and it goes all the way, including to Edim Zomin, about Eid Shaker. Not exactly in order, but it pretty much follows that. And, you know, we had a little fun with Lo Tachmod. The reason I'm mentioning that whole piece is because Ekev is really a focal point of putting the proper relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we should have, and avoiding all the things that we should be avoiding, like don't forget God, don't think you did it on your own, don't forget all the times that you tested God, etc. And a central piece in that retelling is the story of the Egel. And the Egel, which is properly has Maasei Egel Rishon, Maasei Egel Shini, as the Mishnah Megillah talks about in Shmot, and of course is also mentioned in several other places, including in Nechemiah, including in some of the Nevi'im Achronim, for instance, alluded to in Sheyahu, but is retold in Akev briefly, the story of the Egel and the story of how HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to destroy us, and Moshe prayed for us, etc. And it's told from Moshe's point of view. So we see this piece. However, this particular piece, these 11 psukim, and that's all we're going to look at here, that's the end of the intro, are strange. And I'm going to do something very pedagogically unsound, which is we're going to look at the Netziv before we look at the psukim. I just want you to get a taste of it. Netziv is in passage 2. Bahetahi. And it says, Kol ha-parsha ad sof pasukir aleph, which is what we have here. He parsha chamura beheder haseder. It is a very difficult parsha with no visible or obvious sequence to it. Medaleg mi'inyan li'inyan mi'makom lakom mi'zman l'zman. It skips from topic to topic, from place to place, meaning geographic, and time to time. All right? And so therefore he says that needs to be explained. So now let's look at the parsha, and we'll see what it is that he's referring to when we read the story. Ba'etahi. Now, Ba'etahi is a time marker. Right? And Ba'etahi is referencing back to what we had in the previous parak, which is the story of the Egel. Amar Adonai Eli, and this is after Moshe had prayed for us to be saved. So that whole piece is recounted. Psolacha shnei luchot avanim karishonim. What did Hashem tell me to do? Carve two more stones, like the first ones that I carved. Va'ale Eli hahara. So come up, and we assume it means come up with the stones. Ve'asita lecha aron eitz. Now, this is the part that's bizarre. What is Moshe retelling that Hashem commanded him? Carve out two stones, come up, we assume, with them to the mountain, and make an aron eitz. What's an aron eitz?
Wooden box,
right? All right. Ve'echtov al haluchot. Now this is note to the Baalei Kriya. Ve'echtov al haluchot is the way it should be read. A lot of people would typically fall into the trap of saying ve'echtov al haluchot, which is absolutely wrong, because this is a continuation of Hashem's command. Hashem says, come on up, make the box, ve'echtov al haluchot, and I will write on the luchot et hadvarim asher ayu luchot harishonim asher shibarta. In other words, I will write on these luchot, what I had written on the first luchot, the ones you broke. All right? V'samtam ba'aron. Now, samtam means what? You'll put them. What's the them? Which luchot? The new ones. That's what it sounds like. You're going to put them in the aron. Okay, very good. Now, that's the command. And now Moshe is telling, I made it. I made it out of acacia wood. And I carved the stones, which, by the way, is not the order Hashem told him in. And this is sort of like that old Moshe Bezalel thing about what Hashem is telling him based on the significant thing. The significant thing is have the luchot, but sequentially you got to first make the box. So he makes the box and he carves out the luchot. I went up the mountain and I had the two luchot in my hand. In my hand, by the way, not hands. So the luchot are not that big, or Moshe's hands are huge. So the same things, the same 10 utterances that you heard from Hashem on the great day of Matan Torah, he wrote onto these stones that I carved. And then God gave them to me, or maybe that's referring back to the first luchot that God had given to me. So I turned around, I went down. I put the luchot in the aron. Now, here's the question, and that's the title of the shiur. What aron is this? Don't answer yet. Let's read the rest, but you understand there's a little problem. What aron is this? What's our first assumption when we hear the word aron and luchot? It's the Aron of the Mishkan. That's Aron HaBrit, the one that sits there with the Kaporet on it and the Kruvim, and sits in the middle. Why is that difficult here?
Hasn't been made yet.
Hasn't been made yet, when is the Aron made in relation to the Luchot?
Rashi and Rabban argument before or after?
No, they only disagree about the purpose when the command was given. But when was the Aron actually made? The Aron is made significantly later. Because according to everybody, the command to build the Mishkan was first transmitted to the people after Yom Kippur in the Midrashic take when Moshe came down with the second Luchot, and then there was the command to gather all the stuff and make the collection and then start building, etc., which means there was no box ready to go to put the Luchot in. Right? Where were the Luchot? Your guess is as good as mine. Where'd they sit in the meantime? But they weren't in a box. There's no box. And here Moshe says,
why aren't we assuming it's the Aron that Hashem tells Moshe to make
ready? In other words, a different Aron.
Right.
Beautiful. Okay. And that's exactly why the title is Aron or Aronot. Exactly. Okay. Good. Now, Uvnei Yisrael, this is now Moshe going back into narrative. Nasu, not autobiographical. Nasu mi berot bnei yakan mosera. Now, this is different than the Masa'ot that we hear in Parshat Maaseh. Right? Because from Har Sinai, they went to Chatzerot and Paran, etc. What? Here, they're going from Bnei Yakan to Mosera. Sham meit Aharon vayikaver sham. Whoa, time out. What happened? Aharon dies in Mosera, in Parshat Chukat, and in Maaseh, he dies at Hor Hahar. So there's a famous midrash here about they went backwards, etc. But we got a bigger problem. When did the story in the first few psukim happen? What year? The first year. The first year they got out. When did Aharon die? In the last year. All right, so you say, okay, he skipped 39 years. So why did he put these two things together? In other words, why talk about this specific command about the box and the Aron and the second Luchot and putting it in and then jump ahead 39 years to the death of Aron, as if nothing else in the meantime happened, like the Meraglim, or like the Mitonanim, or like Korach, or anything else. Okay. Sham meit Aron veikaver sham v'chein Elazar v'no tachtav. And Elazar took over for Aron. Misham nasu ha-gud goda. They went from there to gud goda, is one of the Masot. V'goda yotvata erotz nachalei mayim. And they go to Yotvata. Yotvata, a place where there are oases. Fine. Ba'etahina. What's ba'etahina mean? At that time, what's that time? Time they got to Yotvata. Alright? Not going to work. Hivdil Adonai et Shevet HaLevi laseit to their own Brit Adonai. What did Hashem do when they got to Ba'itahi? Hashem separated Shevet Levi, whose job is to carry the Aron Brit Hashem, L'sharto ulevarech b'shmo ad hayom hazeh, to serve God and to bless in His name until this very day. Wait, when did that happen? When did Hashem identify the Levim as being a unique Shevet, sanctifying them and giving them that job? So there's a machloket about whether it was at Chet HaEgel or slightly after that, but it was certainly during the first year, because when the Mikdash opens up for business on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, the Levim are already cooking. So how do we get from Aaron to this? Very strange. This is a theme that we find consistently whenever mentioned the specialists, the Levim. The Levim do not have land because Hashem is their inheritance, etc. When did this happen? When did Moshe go up for 40 days and 40 nights? And God didn't want to destroy you. When's that? That's before the second Luchot. In other words, the chronology is Moshe gets the Torah. Moshe then goes up to the mountain and is up there for 40 days, 40 nights, and Hashem is giving a mitzvot, ostensibly mitzvot about the Mishkan. At the end of the time, Hashem gives Moshe the Luchot that Hashem created. Moshe comes down, sees the eagle, breaks the Luchot, comes, and Hashem says, I'm going to destroy them. Moshe comes up and prays for them, fasts, etc. Hashem says, okay, I'm going to forgive them. Then Moshe comes up again, and according to rabbinic chronology, there's three sets of 40 days. The last set starts on Rosh Chodesh Elul and ends on Yom Kippur, when he's then allowed, has the second Luchot. Okay? How did we do this jumping? Now, I understand that Moshe, in retelling the history, and we saw this at the beginning of Dvarim, is not necessarily sticking to a timeline, because that's not his job. His job is not to tell you a history lesson, okay, here's the dates, answered, matching answer of, you know, what happened on what date. His job is to teach you lessons. But this is way too jumpy, and that's why the Netziv says what he does. This parsha needs clarification, because it jumps from place to place, from time to time, from topic to topic, and doesn't seem to make any sense. And this is the end of the parsha. And Hashem's response is then to say, okay, take the people, I mean, I've forgiven them, take the people, and take them to the land, and I'm going to give you the land. So I think it's very hard to figure out. So before suggesting a solution, I'm going to suggest that there is a similar parasha, a parasha that has part of our problem, not the whole problem. There's no parasha that has this level of problems of chronological and geographical and topical jumping back and forth. But there's another parsha that we all know that if we take a look at it, seems to suffer from a little bit of a difficulty. And it is the parsha of the Masa'ot in Baalotcha. And just quickly to summarize, the camps have been set up in the beginning of Bamidbar, and we just got the mitzvah of the Chatzotzrot, and now we get a description of how they're going to travel. And so Machane Yehuda travels. And then the Mishkan comes down. It was, where's the Mishkan? The Mishkan's in the middle of the camp. So Machane Yehuda travels. When the cloud moves, they take the Mishkan down. Then the second camp, Reuven, travels. And then what happens? Bnei Kehat travel and take the Kelim on their shoulders, and they wait until the Mishkan, and the Mishkan is set up before the rest of the camp comes. He came with the Mishkan Ad Boam, which means where's the Mishkan in this whole picture? It's in the middle. And it travels in the middle, meaning the first camp travels and then take down the Mishkan. The second camp travels and you carry the tools of the Kelim of the Mishkan and move ahead of them, get there, set up the Mishkan so it's already in place when the second camp has arrived. It's in the middle. Okay, very nice. I'm comfortable with that. Please look down at Pasuk Lamed Gimel. And in practice, what actually happened? They traveled for 3 days. Va'aron brit Adonai noseh lifnehem. Where's the Aron? Where's the Aron?
Front.
The Aron is in front of them, not in the middle.
Okay. They didn't dismantle the Aron. Maybe they just dismantled the walls, the crushing of the Mishkan, but the Aron went ahead.
So in other words, the description of the Mishkan is
the Mishkan
and the Krashim and the Shulchan and everything else. That, but the Aron has a different tafkid. And the Aron's tafkid is to go ahead, which somehow got left out in the Masot. I'm with you on that. I think you're right. All right? That's what. Now, very famous pasuk. Vayhi bin Soha Aron vayomer Moshe. Which Aron is this? Bin Soha Aron, whenever the Aron would go out, Moshe would say, when is the Aron going out here? For war. And Moshe is saying, Hashem, stand up and destroy all of your enemies. Let them all scatter. Uvnucho Yomar. What does Uvnucho Yomar mean? When it would come to rest. What's it? The Aron. He would say, Shuva Adonai, Votafi Israel. Bring back all the soldiers safely, essentially. Much more poetically than that. Which means, what's the Aron's job here? The Aron's job is to go out to war. Well, time out. I thought the Aron's supposed to be with the Mishkan in the middle. Maybe for travel, it works differently. Maybe it leads the way. But in war, the Mishkan's in the middle of the camp. They're all in the camp. And now you're going out to war and you're taking an Aron with you. That leads to the very famous Machloket, which you can see if you turn the page in Source 8. Right? So in the sugya in the sixth parak of Shkalim in the Yerushalmi, Tana Rabbi Yehuda ben Lakish Amar Shtei Aronot Hayu Halchin Im Yisrael Bamidbar. They had two Aronot. Echad Shaita Torah Netuna Betocho, and get this, Ve'achad Shahayu Shivrei Luchot Netunim Betocho. So one Aron had the Torah in it. Now, which Torah is this? It's not a Sefer Torah because that only gets written at the end. So it must be the second Luchot. And the other one has the Shivrei Luchot, the broken tablets. Well, there's one Aron we were commanded to build in Shemot, right? It's in Source 9. Okay, so we'll take a look at how this plays out. The one that had the Torah in it, which we're saying is the second Luchot, was sitting in the Ol Moed, sitting in the middle. And it quotes the Pasuk about the Mapilim. When the Mapilim went to war, and Moshe said, you better not go, Hashem's not with you, said the Ohel and the Aaron and Moshe all stay in the camp. They didn't leave the camp. That's that. The one that had the broken tablets, it would go out with them, meaning at war. That's Vahibin Saharon, that other Aaron. And sometimes it was with them, sometimes it was on war. That's Rabbi Yehuda ben Lakish. There was only one Aaron. There was one story, and you all remember the story, we studied here together years ago, when the Plishtim were attacking, and Bnei Yisrael were getting beat, and they said, you know what, let's go get the Aaron, we'll bring the Aaron out, and the Aaron will save us. V'yoshinu. And they brought the Aaron out, and who came out with the Aaron? Hophni and Pinchas. And Bnei Yisrael lost, and they were killed, 34,000 were killed, and Hophni and Pinchas were taken and killed, and the Aaron was taken, and that's the famous story when the guy told Eli, and Eli heard the Aaron was taken, and he died, and then Mrs. Pinchas went into childbirth, she died, named her kid Ichabod. Very famous story in Perek Dalet of Shmuel Aleph. Said there's one time, Rabbanan said there's one time the Aaron actually left the camp, and that was then, and it was a disaster.
So their Vayibin Saharon is not war then? They're talking about the normal traveling then? What did Rabbanan explain that pasuk?
Good question.
Must be traveling.
A good question. Right. Except the rest of the pasuk doesn't fit with that. And what the rest of the passage here does is it plays psukim against each other, saying these psukim actually support, how do you call it, Rabbi Yehuda ben Lakish. So for instance, it has, Kray Messiah lo Rabbanan. We have a pasuk that supports the Rabbanan. This is what the Plishtim said that one time. Who's going to save us from this great God? As if to say, this is the Aaron that's associated with God, the one that went inside. However, that's not such a strong proof. And then Kray Messiah lo Rabbi Yehuda ben Lakish. We have a pasuk that supports Rabbi Yehuda ben Lakish. The truth is, we got tons of them because throughout Sefer Shmuel, and this when I get to about the separation, throughout Sefer Shmuel, where is the Aaron? Sefer Shmuel starts. We've got the Mishkan in Shiloh. By the way, we never hear about the Aaron. We hear about the Mishkan, and we hear about Chana. We hear about Elkanah giving korbanot and Chana davening, and Eli is in charge of the Mishkan, and people bring korbanot and terrible abuse by Hophni and Pinchas. We hear about that. What happens next? We never hear about Shiloh again, but we do hear that the Aaron goes out and gets taken and wreaks havoc among the Plishtim and the plague. And then it comes back, right, to Yostei Yoshua Beit HaShimshi. And there's a plague there, so they send it up to Kiryat Yarim. The Aaron alone is sitting up in Kiryat Yarim for 20 years. By the way, Shaul doesn't do anything about the Aaron, and then we got this pasuk that supports Rabbi Yonah Lakish says, Shaul says, oh, bring the Aaron over here. Sounds like there's two Aaronot. That's part of the difficulty here. But the Aaron is consistently playing a separate role not related to the Mishkan. So does that mean that the Mishkan has its own Aaron that's just part of the Mishkan and there's a separate Aaron out there? Very unclear. But now take a look on the first page at how some of the Rishonim deal with our Parsha. And by the way, we still have the biggest problem, which is the Netziv's challenge, which is to make sense of our Parsha. And I got about 3 minutes to do it. All right? I'm going to do it. So you see that Rashi says, "Varon Brit Hashem, Zeha Aron Eutzei Mehem LaMelchama Uvo Shivrei Luchot." Rashi is exactly quoting Rabbi Yehuda ben Lakish in the Shkalim. There's two Aronot. The one that Moshe made here is the one that has the Shivrei Luchot in it. Now, by the way, why is that difficult? Because what did Hashem tell him to put in the Aron? The new Luchot. Except, remember, I said before, the Samtam Ba'Aron could actually be saying, "The ones you broke, put them in this box." Right?
Bring them up with him to Har Sinai the second time.
No. Look at it carefully. He comes up with tablets, right? Where's the box? Box is down there. He didn't say he brought the box. Brings the tablets up, right? Hashem writes on the tablets. He brings them down. Yeah. And then either before or afterwards, he put the Shivrei Luchot. That's why Rashi's reading it. Because Rashi's saying that this Aaron had the Shivrei Luchot.
That's not what the pasuk says.
It's difficult in the pasuk. No question.
Make two Luchot. Aleha Hara. You're on the mountain.
Yeah, but then what does he say? Vas Aronetz, and I went up. And then I came down, and I put them in the Aron, which is the them. Okay. Rashi reads the Shvilcha. I'm pointing out, Ramban here is upset with Rashi. Right?
Weren't the first Luchot ground up?
So, evidently, there was enough stuff around there to have Shivrei Luchot. Right?
Both.
Well, you know, the Sota thing, you know, that ground it up. That was, no, that wasn't the Luchot. That was the Egel. That was the Egel.
Oh, okay.
Easy to confuse them, I know. Right? No, it's all, one led to the other, I know. All right. So, and the Chizkuni says something similar. V'aron b'rit Adonai Yishu v'fayshim Moshe hayah noso. That Moshe carried this Aron. Unlike, and he quotes a pasuk in Hosea, "Vashlach l'vanecha Moshe v'taron u'Miriam." I sent, and the idea is like I sent, meaning the Aron is what Moshe is carrying. Aval Aron shasab et salal ayabem tzad galim. So you find here Rishonim who are saying there's two Aronot. There's the Aron that Moshe makes here. It's got the shivrei luchot in it. Its job is to go out to war. And then there's the other Aron that's got the regular luchot, the non-broken luchot, sitting inside of the machaneh, and that's its job. That's its position. All right. On the other hand, you see the Sforno on top of the second page. The Aron is only in front of them during those special 3 days. Otherwise, it was in the camp because there's only one Aron. Right? Shadal says the same thing. In other words, we've got huge, huge machloket and two schools, one Aron or two. If you say there's one Aron, then you got a big problem trying to figure out how these psukim jibe together. If on the other hand you have two, where in Shmot is there ever a command to build a second Aron? Moshe mentions it here, but where's that coming from? So there's certainly a great difficulty here. We skip right to the to what I think is a piece of the solution to the Netziv. The truth is, if you want, we could probably do a finishing piece on this next week. But if you take a look at the bottom, you'll see that this story is really made up of three parts. And the two chief parts both start with a common literary marker, which is Ba'etahi. It starts Ba'etahi and in the middle of Ba'etahi. Ba'etahi cannot be saying at that time that the last thing happened, because the last thing happened in year 40. Ba'etahi has to mean we're going back to our original story of Chet Ha'Egel. The real story here is Chet Ha'Egel.
What happens in year 40?
Is when Aaron dies. We can't, Pasuk Chet can't be going back to that. So Pasuk Aleph is saying, Ba'etahi, when the Ego happened and I prayed for you and God forgave you, then we have the whole story with the Luchot Shniot and the Aron and everything else. Secondly, a second thing happened, Ba'etahi, is that Hashem divided, separated Shevet Levi. That's Ba'etahi, that's up to the Ego. Separate Shevet Levi, and Shevet Levi's job to do what? To carry what? Aron Brit Hashem. So what we have in this parsha is really the story, if you will, it's according to Rashi and others, of the two Aronot. The first half is the story of the Aron, its job is to go with Moshe, to go out to war. And here's the upshot of it. What does it carry in it? Shivrei Luchot. Why? We'll see in a second. Then there's the Aron that's supposed to stay in there, that the Levim, that's their job to do. They're the ones who are guarding it. Why are they the ones who guarded it? How'd they earn that? Because they're the ones who guarded the law in it by executing the violators of the Egel. And so they are the ones who guard the proper Luchot. In the meantime, there's a jump ahead to Aharon. Why? So quick note. A famous Abarbanel. The Abarbanel asked the question, how could it be that Moshe and Aharon, especially Aharon, have this terrible sentence put on them because of a stick and a rock? So Barbanel says, Lahadam, it's not the case. It's a cover-up. Barbanel, it's a cover-up. Because to protect Moshe and Aaron's reputation, the Torah ascribes these relatively minor things, but Moshe himself says at the beginning of Dvarim, the reason he's not going to land is because of Chet HaMeraglim. And he says, Aaron is because of the Egel. Where does the Torah hint to that? Right here, it jumps ahead and has the death of Aaron 39 years later. In the middle of telling us of the consequences of Chet HaEgel. The consequences of Chet HaEgel are three things. The first thing is that now we have to have man-made luchot. And you have to have a separate Aron, and that Aron is going to go out with you to war. The second take is that Aron is not going to be able to go into the land. And the third take is that Shevet Levi has now been elevated to their position, and they're going to be the ones to guard the Aron HaBrit, the other Aron. And so it jumps in and using Ba'etahi draws us back to that original time to say these are the consequences. Last thought, why would it be that the Aron with the Shivrei Luchot would be the one to go out to war? What is our greatest pride? For some people, think Teutonic, their greatest pride is Superman. Our greatest pride is the fact that we are Avdei Hashem. And the best sign of the fact that we're Avdei Hashem is that we're not embarrassed to admit our chet before our HaKadosh Baruch Hu. By the way, the Shivrei Luchot are not shown to the enemy. They're in a box. But we're carrying out because our pride is the fact that we can do tshuva. And that even though we did this terrible chet, we have a great leader like Moshe who prayed for us, and we do tshuva. And the Shivrei Luchot are sort of our badge of honor. And we put them in the Aron that goes out to war. The other Aron is the one that stays in with the Torah Shlema, and that's the job of the Levim to watch.
So we'll win the war because we admit that we make mistakes in Yeshiva?
And we have that special relationship with our Kodesh Baruch Hu, exactly. Not that we think we are Kochivot Simyadi, but it's all from our Kodesh Baruch Hu.